So when I stepped away from coaching at the high school level 5 years ago, I thought I was done getting angry emails from parents, frustrated about their kids' playing time. Yet, due to the fact that I write the occasional article for sports parents, this continues to open the door for parent emails. And I would say 99% of these parent emails come from parents of high school or college athletes, yes, college athletes, who are angry at the coach for not playing their child. Now, just recently, one mother emailed me asking me for advice. Now, just a little disclaimer here. For the record, I do appreciate that people feel safe and encouraged to reach out for advice. So this isn't to shame any parent, but I just kind of want to draw attention to this growing issue. Consistently, the arguments and frustrations parents vent to me and to their child's coaches, these are actually concerning. And I just kind of want to recap this one email this mother sent to me. I can't read the whole thing because it was about 4 pages long, but essentially, she was emailing asking for advice on what to do. Her son was a senior in high school. He played the center position and the long snapper position in American football. And then honestly, it was kind of this incredible email because it really encapsulated almost every argument parents can give coaches on why their child should get more playing time. Like, if you've been coaching competitively in high school or college, you'll absolutely recognize a few. First off, he's a senior. Secondly, it's been his dream. Thirdly, he's worked so hard. Next, it's humiliating to be there standing on the sideline. Their child is devastated. Their skills coach told them that he was great. They shouldn't be penalized for sitting out injured, right? All these arguments are laid out in this email, but two lines in particular really stand out to me. And one is, our son is devastated and we don't know what to do. We have always told him to work harder than everyone else, keep your head down and go to work and it will all work out. And the second is, the thought of staying on the sideline as a senior is both humiliating and a waste of time. Now, I share this not to shame this parent or because I don't feel empathy towards players that don't get to play. Especially when they're hard workers and they work and they have a good attitude. But we all know that hard work doesn't always equate to getting what we want in life. And this really all comes back to this issue that we're going to discuss today, which is entitlement. Players and parents feel they are entitled to playing time. They're entitled to awards. Their child's entitled to be the captain because they're a senior, or they're entitled to recognition because of all their hard work. Now, Nate and I today, we're going to dive into what really entitlement is. What shapes does it take within our program and how we can address it? Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast brought to you by Thrive on Challenge. I'm JP Nurbin, joined by my friend and co-host Nate Sanderson. Each week in about 30 minutes, we discuss important principles and strategies of transformational leadership. At Thrive on Challenge, we help coaches to raise the standards and strengthen the relationships in their program because we know this type of culture produces better leaders, better people, and better results. To learn more about how we can help you, go to thriveonchallenge.com, where you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter and get the coaching notes to every episode of this podcast. As coaches, we know, we understand that there is a growing sense of entitlement within athletes and within their parents. And we all have witnessed and experienced the negative effects of that entitlement. So before we get into some ways that we can combat that sense of entitlement that is just continuously growing and growing within our culture, I think, Nate, we should probably start by first defining, like, what is entitlement and where is it most prevalent in our team's culture?
I think when coaches and adults use the word entitled to talk about their players or to talk about their kids or to talk about their students, I think in some ways it's become a catch-all, you know, for the things that frustrate us about these kids today. So one of the things that's always been confusing for me about this word is that it's used differently in different contexts. And it wasn't really until I read a book by Mark Manson called The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F, where he defines what entitlement means, at least to him, in the context that he sees it in his work. And he says, entitlement is the feeling as though you deserve good things without actually earning them. And when I started just thinking more and more about that definition, I really think it's broad enough to be all-encompassing. And here's what I mean by that. So oftentimes, entitlement doesn't just manifest itself as, but I want it, but I want it, but I want it. Now, it might sound like that in my three-year-old's voice at home, but typically when you're working with a high school athlete, they may be trying to build an argument that they want the thing that they want because they want it really bad, but they know they can't say that in a parent meeting or in a conversation with me about why they should get playing time, for example. So instead, they try to rationalize and find another reason besides how playing time is earned to justify the fact that they should play. In other words, they want the good thing. In this case, we're talking about playing time without actually earning it.
Well, and obviously, you know, we're trying to create as coaches a culture where everything needs to be earned. You know, like to be a part of that team, you have to meet certain standards. To get playing time, you have to meet certain performance standards. We've talked about this in episode 134, you know, which coaches refer back to a lot when it comes to how they communicate deciding playing time to the parents and to the players. And I think we're trying to approach this problem of entitlement kind of from another angle today. You know, I think there's great value in communicating how things are earned, but we're still trying to deal with this mindset of, I still feel like I don't need to earn it. Now, when players have that certain type of mindset, of that entitlement mindset that you're talking about, there's some common ways that we see them trying to articulate that they want it really bad with these other rationales and these reasons.
Well, here's the thing about entitlement, JP, is that it's sneaky. In other words, like, it isn't that parents are going to say, look, I know my daughter doesn't deserve to play, but she really wants to play. Again, nobody's going to say that, right? So they're going to try to justify it in a different way. They're going to try to build an argument that she deserves to play, not necessarily because of your performance standards, but because of some other factors, right, that should play into the equation for her. So what does that sound like when you're talking with a player, you're having a parent meeting? Like, I ran into all of these last year, these arguments and justifications for why someone should play. One, maybe it's because of seniority. They may not be the best player, but they've been playing their whole life. They've had this long career in basketball. It's their last year, so they deserve good things, right? Even if they haven't earned them based on their performance. You might get a character argument. She's a great kid. She's always embodied your culture. She works really hard. You might get a love of the game argument that says she deserves playing time. She deserves a varsity shirt because she loves basketball. You don't understand. 3 years old, we're out in the driveway. Can't get the ball out of her hands for the next 15 years. She loves it so much, as though that should qualify her to earn playing time separately or differently than the standards that we apply to everybody else. You might get arguments about an AAU coach, and because it says elite on her AAU jersey, you know, all of a sudden what she's done for another team should justify what she can do for your team. The personal trainer might think she should be going Division I. Maybe they won a state championship in fifth grade, or they had great success in middle school, as though, look, all of these things they've done in the past, clearly they deserve to be able to play now and in the future. And so entitlement, again, it takes a whole bunch of different forms. And what I love about Manson's definition and why I cling to that now is because I think it's all encompassing. As I said before, it's universal. There's the way that playing time is earned. There's the way that a grade is earned in the classroom. There's a way that my daughter's allowance is earned at home. That's defined, right? But if you're making an argument that she should have it for a different reason, that's entitlement. She should have the good thing of playing, or the A in the class, or the $5 a week, not because she's done the work, not because she's reached the standard, not because she's the best player compared to everybody else, but simply because of one of these other reasons that we come up with to try to justify for getting what she wants.
Well, all those reasons that you just kind of listed there, Nate, I've heard them all before in some shape or fashion. I think the one that probably sticks with me the most is the player or the parent's rationale or reason being that they've made this investment. Like the player, I've invested so much time. I've showed up to all the workouts. I've done all this. Or the parent, you know, we've invested so much over, you know, through the years in their career and improving them. We've paid for the personal trainer. We've paid for the travel team. You know, so everyone feels when they invest something and they put money into something, even from a financial standpoint or a time standpoint, that they're going to get something in return. I even had a parent, and this is competitive sports, high school level, say, I paid for the ticket to come to the game. My kid should play. It blew my mind at the time, but I think it all comes back to this idea that when people are investing with their time or money, that they expect a return. Like, this is the transactional culture that we live in, that we talk about. We're trying to be transformational coaches. We're just trying to be even competitive coaches, not even about transformational coaches, just trying to be competitive coaches in a world that is so transactional that every time our child invests any time, they expect the return. You know, like, it's just immediate gratification, microwave culture that we live in. And so when, you know, you listed all those reasons, I think the number one thing I kind of connect with is this idea around investment. We've invested time and resources and money, and we expect something in return. And forgive me if I sound heartless, because you do, as a coach, when a kid works so hard, when they are invested, when a parent does help out a lot with the program, you know, things away from off the court or off the field, they're that active, involved parent. We appreciate that. We appreciate the parent. We appreciate the child's effort. But at the same time, that's not how we decide playing time in competitive sports.
And JP, I think it's important to note here that, like, we shouldn't begrudge a parent or a player or a family for their investment in the player's development. It should benefit them if they're working with a trainer, if they're going to camps in the summer, if they're playing a club sport, you know, outside of the season. It gives them an opportunity to continue to develop, but it doesn't guarantee the outcome at our level or on our team, because that still has to be earned. So the challenge for coaches becomes, you have players and you have families and you have parents that are coming into your program at the high school level that have built up in their own minds the reasons why their daughter should play or should dress varsity or should have a great career or should get recognition, whatever those things might be that they want out of your program. And they've established that mindset long before they get to you at the high school level. And so you can see the difficulty and the challenge of getting everyone on the same page when it comes to how things are earned. And so as coaches, how do we get everyone on the same page and communicate how things are earned in our program? And I think there's two critical keys here, JP. One is, you have to be clear in your communication. It's got to be in the player manual. You've got to talk about it with your performance indicators in terms of the stats that you're looking at and the skills that you are required in the offense or the defense that you're running. Like, the more clear, the more concise you can be about, this is the standard. This is what we evaluate when it comes to performance or comes to culture. These are the things that players are competing against each other, right, to rise to the top, to get the opportunity to play. The more clear that is, the better. But clarity also requires consistency. It's one thing to lay out the standard. It's one thing to say that, well, we're evaluating on-ball defense and, you know, the ability to rebound and keep people off the glass. But then you have to be consistent in your decision-making. So you can't take a senior who is a great kid, maybe your favorite player, maybe a captain, maybe an all-academic, and say, well, but it's the end of her career, so I want to try to get her out there, even though she's 10th on the team in on-ball percentage and she gives up more rebounds and the other team takes shots. But you give her some mercy minutes, some loyalty minutes. That undermines your credibility as a coach unless there's clear communication about why you're doing that up front, right? But the more consistent that you can be in your decision making, the more opportunity there is for you to build your credibility, so that gradually over time, as people get to your level at varsity, as people come into your program, they start to assume, well, this is the way that it's done here.
Well, I know you've kind of been talking about how this clarity and consistency is important with high school teams, but this issue of entitlement around playing time and other things is an issue not just at the high school level, it's at the collegiate level, it's at the youth level when there's, you know, programs that are designed to be highly competitive, you know, club teams. And it's also an issue at the professional level. You know, the semi-professional team that I'm coaching this year, this has been one of the biggest topics that we've, you know, tried to address. And there's two things I guess I'd share that we've done to really be clear and consistent on this. And the first is early on in the season, one of our first team meetings, I just asked my players what they felt should earn them playing time. And we put on the table all the things and some of the arguments like, does seniority, does coming to training get you playing time? We put all those things, those arguments they like to give for why they should play, and we just put them on there alongside our objective. And our objective is to win the league championship. And we said, if that is our objective, you know, how should we be determining playing time? And what we got out of that team meeting at the end of it was, those things are important. You know, we value people that have been in the program for a long time. We value people that work hard. But at the end of the day, if we want to be successful, the players that need to play are the ones that are going to give us the best chance of winning. Now, that was a really effective kind of team meeting to really kind of be clear on how we were going to proceed when it came to divvying up playing time throughout the season. But now the challenge for me as a coach is to be consistent, and to be consistent not just on how I divvy up that playing time, but be consistent in my communication. And so the week before our first game, I sent out a Google form. And on that Google form, there was multiple questions, but two really important questions that I felt I needed to ask before I had a one-on-one with them about where I saw them on the team as far as themselves in the rotation and, you know, the minutes that I expected them to play. And so those two questions were, first, where do you see yourself in the rotation? And secondly, why do you think this is where you should be in the rotation? Now, the first question was really important because I needed to know if we were on the same page. Like, you know, if we both see them as starters, or we both see them as the sixth man, that's really helpful. Because if they were not on the same page, I know it's going to be a much more difficult conversation. I probably need to put a little bit more preparation into it. The second question about why do you think this is where you should be in the rotation, I'm looking for two things. One is I'm looking for misalignment in how we are seeing their performance. So some players might be like, oh, I think I'm one of the better defenders. And I could go, no, well, actually, the statistics show us this. But the other thing I'm looking for is some of the common reasons that you just stated there or earlier around our reasons for playing. You know, like I've been in the program for years, or, you know, I've been working hard at training. And so I can come back to those things, acknowledge them. Yeah, you've been working really hard. But then bring them back to the reality. The reality is that's not earning you playing time. And I can give them that reminder. So it's not just consistency in how we enforce the playing time. It's consistency, I think, in how we communicate that playing time as well.
And JP, what you're doing when you bring that conversation back to the criteria, the performance criteria, is you continue to reinforce how things are earned. And there isn't, you know, there's no question that when your players are consistently at training and they're working hard and they're competing, that they're making your team better. But that doesn't mean that they're one of the best seven players in the gym, and therefore that they should play, you know, as much as they might think that they should. There's another aspect, and in a lot of ways, there's another negative consequence to this sense of entitlement kind of settling into our society. And that is that we've lost the intrinsic reward, you know, that feeling, what it feels like to earn something. I remember when I was a high school teacher 100 years ago, I had a reputation as having the most difficult class in the school. And in fact, there was a time when I taught government, which was a required for graduation, that our failure rate was about 20% of the students had to retake it, and they had to pass it in order to graduate. And so I remember being called into the office because the administration was not real thrilled about this, and asked me, my principal asked me, you know, what is it with you? Why do you have to make this class so hard for all of your students? And I told him, I said, when students get through my class, I want them to feel like they've accomplished something. I want them to feel like they've earned something. If they get a good grade, because they had to work really hard and they had to study and they had to prepare and they got the grade they wanted, they don't get that reward in classes where they can just sort of show up and turn in, you know, their work and get their grade. Like, it's different when there's a challenge and you put yourself out there and you say, I want to go for that thing, and you work really hard and you get it. That sense of reward is kind of lost when entitlement creeps in and gives us all these other reasons why you should have it without earning it. And so when we're working with our players, that struggle, there's even a sense of courage, you know, saying we're going to try to get to the state tournament, even though we know it's going to be difficult. And even if we fail, we're going to be proud of our effort. Like, even that has value that sometimes gets lost in this entitlement world that we live in.
I love that example because I just kind of resonated with it as a teacher as well, because I had a similar reputation for being very fairly challenging. And I was the one that was always getting emails from parents about their kids' grades. Not the guy that was dishing out A's like they were hotcakes, right? And it just kind of just comes back to this idea of like, that's the culture we live in. You know, it's just, I never got many emails saying, thanks for challenging my kid and making this a really hard year and him actually learn something. It's always like, well, he's got the F, and is there any way he could give him some extra credit or all these type of things? You know, it was just like that he was entitled to pass, you know? And I think that just kind of ties back into this culture, which is just so challenging. And I think we could be really clear and consistent on what it is to earn. I think that's going to help. But I do think we kind of need to prepare our coaches for the fact that it's still going to be challenging, right? Because there's so many cultural messages that are constantly at play here. They're going against what we are trying to create.
And JP, the thing that made it worth it to me as a teacher is when those students would come back and you would see them around and they would say, your class is one of maybe one or two that I had in high school that actually prepared me for college. And that felt really good, you know, because it felt like we were doing what we were supposed to do to prepare them for the real world. And when we think about, you know, the problems of entitlement, and you mentioned this before, it doesn't just stop with our interactions with players and our conflict with parents and all the emails and the things that come from that. It disadvantages our players for the real world, because at some point, whether it's in college or it's in their first job or they're competing to become a manager, or they're competing to get a job somewhere, it comes down to you're going to have to earn it in the real world. And I think, you know, as coaches, it's a service that we provide to our kids is our willingness to take on the sense of entitlement so that it isn't the first time that they've had to face challenge and earn something when they're out there on their own in the real world.
So you mentioned Mark Manson's book earlier, and one of my favorite lines from the book is about how entitlement isn't just about people getting good things, but it's about people feeling good, right? The exact quote is that the problem with entitlement is that it makes people need to feel good about themselves all the time. The problem with entitlement is that it makes people need to feel good about themselves all the time. When I hear this, I instantly think of that phrase I hear parents say all the time, I just want my kids to be happy. Now, I'm not saying there's something wrong with wanting our kids to be happy. I sure want my kids to be happy, but there's this paradox. Like, the more we seem to aim directly at it, the more we're going to miss it. In Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl is a Holocaust survivor. In his book, Man's Search for Meaning, he says, happiness cannot be pursued, it must ensue. And it only does so as the unintended side effect of one's dedication to a cause greater than oneself, or as the byproduct of one's surrender to a person other than oneself. Happiness must happen, and the same holds for success. You have to let it happen by not caring about it. So happiness, you know, feeling good, our kids feeling good, that can't be the aim for parents, and it can't and it shouldn't be the aim for parents and leaders, right? We should be aiming to support people through the struggles, not save them from the struggles. Saving them from the struggle to bring moments of happiness, that's hurting them as much as abandoning them in the moments of struggle. And so our aim should be, as Frankl says, our aim should be on serving someone other than ourselves. That's the potential power of team. It can be a thing that brings happiness, because not only do we need, you know, we're talking about earning things in our culture, but team sports, they teach us that life is hard, things are hard, and we're not always going to feel good. And when we don't feel good about our playing time, our recognition, or our performance, we're better off focusing on serving others. We're better off focusing on a goal, something that's bigger than ourselves. And if coaches and parents could encourage a perspective more like that, then our kids would indeed be more happy.
Well, JP, as we wrap up here this week, I want to leave coaches with one other suggestion. And you and I have been experimenting with this a little bit with your team in Ireland. And you referenced this already in the podcast once, but that is creating scenarios or conversations and challenging your players to debate and to talk about how playing time should be earned. And whether that's, you know, working in the different dynamics of playing time, you know, when it comes to performance and game situations and practice attendance and attitude and effort, you know, there's a lot of things that could go on to that list. I think some of the best conversations that some of the coaches in our program have had with their teams is just laying it out and giving them a challenge. You have a senior that averages 8 points a game. You have a sophomore that does this. You have a junior that does that. You can only play one. Or do you play them all? You know, and you just get them to debate a little bit. What do you do when a player comes back from injury? What do you do when a player has been on vacation? You know, how much leash do you give a starter versus bringing somebody off the bench? And I think getting players to discuss that amongst themselves will help them to kind of clarify, again, bringing back to the standards, how things should be earned.
And that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening into the Coaching Culture Podcast. Please do two things for us. Share this. Share this episode with other coaches out there. Heck, maybe even share it with a few parents in your program if you're brave enough. And secondly, just take 15 to 30 seconds to leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts.